Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with a budget, and if it will join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today we are discussing Dennis Curlett's Paradox Lost. This is Dennis Curlett's first feature-length film. In Paradox Lost, we follow Barnaby, played by Danny Seibel, who is a struggling improv artist and lead of his improv group. A stranger named Copper, played by Dennis Curlett, comes up to Barnaby and claims to be his son from the future. To prove this, Copper shows Barnaby a photo of Barnaby. Barnaby attempts to use the time machines to fix things in the past and ends up creating a terrible, possibly hilarious, present. Tom, what do you think the goal of the movie creators were?
I mentioned this last week in our first impressions. I think the goal of the creators, is to explore these kind of science fiction inspired philosophies, namely this idea of potentially a paradox by using a mode that normally isn't employed in science fiction improv. I think the goal in terms of this kind of philosophical stuff actually kind of doesn't come out in the wash. It seems to be more of charting the main character Barnaby's arc of development from this kind of more materialistic, ambitious, success-oriented guy to someone who could be a good partner to his wife or girlfriend and eventually a father. So it ends up being this kind of arc of development that shows a person going from being materially driven to driven towards a family, prompted by the science fiction. However, we explore that through improvised scenes, which are not only how the script seems to be written or partially written, but it's also part of the plot. Our main character is an aspiring improv artist.
That's really funny, Tom, because I know improv's a big part of the plot, but I didn't realize until you just said it now that it's also in the DNA of the movie. It's not just a plot point. It's now looking back, a lot of those scenes were probably an adaptation of an improv they did, or even like the way that the writing works feels like improv. Even though it feels like a script a lot of times, it feels like scripted improv.
Yeah, I think that it's probably a mixture, right? I get a real sort of sense of Judd Apatow, how Judd Apatow's films work, either that he's directed or produced, have scripted scenes and have improvised scenes built in. This is also true of like the Adam McKay things, right? From SNL. You're going to have scripted things, but you're also going to have a lot of improv. I think this is probably closer to the Judd Apatow thing where plenty is scripted and it needs to be. And a little bit here and there is improvised. It's actually sometimes hard to tell, though. There's scenes that I think are improv, but you know, I'm not entirely sure.
I also quite agree that the character's main arc is going from, I'll call it a young man's dream of being the improv guy, but then he's faced with, I'll say, an old man's dream, which is having a family, having a son. So that is definitely the other side of this movie. Mm-hmm. So I agree that is the other goal. So how do you think they did? Do you think they were successful?
I think they're successful in the sense that they presented the possibility of improv and science fiction as going together. That basically you can sort of import this improvisational technique into what we might think of as more of a heady genre. Typically, very heady genres tend to be kind of scripted carefully, they tend to be sort of auteur vehicles, right? We could think of Solaris as an example of this, as a very heady science fiction movie. And even though I despise 2001: A Space Odyssey, it also is presumptively a heady movie that that has that kind of auteur feel, right? Director controlled. The director is kind of the godhead of this thing and controls everything. I think that these creators, and just more than the director, but the director and the actors as well, were successful in showing that this heady genre doesn't need that kind of auteur figure to succeed, right? We could have this kind of lighter improvised mode. Does it work all the time? Probably not, but it's still a really, really good and I think interesting attempt. How about you? What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the improv definitely lightens everything up and is an interesting tool to use here to take something that could have been 2001 or something more serious and allow it to breathe a little bit, to laugh a little bit, to have some room for that. But like you said, it's kind of a double-edged sword. I enjoyed the feel of the improv most of the time. Again, a lot of the jokes worked pretty well. But as with improv, it was tough for the movie to find its own flow, its own rhythm. So a lot of the scenes didn't connect really, which again, improv, that they're, when you're on stage, it can be a rough transition. That's fine. But in the movie, it was a little jarring or a little bit like, what are we doing now? Why are we shifting over to this plot point? I'm excited to see what the director does moving forward with this tool, or if could this tool be used in other genres or other applications where you can use improv to kind of stir the pot a little bit as you're going.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think that the movie does feel disconnected, I think in part because it doesn't feel like it's moving forward, right? It's a very, it's a kind of very exciting opening when we are given the conflict, namely that this man's son has come back from the past and that in 10 months' time, he, Barnaby, our main character, is going to be dead because of a, we presume, a global catastrophe. We don't know anything about the global catastrophe. We don't know what's going to kill him or kill everyone. And the world seems to be different in the future, but we're not entirely sure how. And we're told that these characters are going to find another time traveler in order to suss out this mystery. And they never do. We never get anywhere. It's not that we come closer and it's never fully realized. We get nowhere.
Nothing, right? By the time they find the other time traveler, he's not willing to talk because that's kind of against the rules of the time travelers, whose goal in the movie, some of the time travelers' goal are to come back to assassinate people, and then other time travelers' goal is to bury the bodies that have been assassinated. Which, again, now that I'm thinking about it, that's exactly what you'd say on an improv stage. Like, If you're improving, I'm a time traveler. Why are you time traveling? To bury the bodies, right? That's the answer you come up with. And I think that's why there's nothing on the other side. Because all this stuff is kind of made up on the spot. That's why it doesn't, like, they don't know because they haven't thought it through in a good way. Like, that's how improv works. And that's why the movie doesn't feel like it's moving forward. It's always just sprawling like an improv. Like, it's just looking for the next joke.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That it's looking for the next joke. It's not creating the stakes, right? And we know, you know, so the world ending is obviously high stakes, but you do need a sort of game, right? In order to create stakes, meaning there needs to be a clear way to get what we want our characters to get. There needs to be a clear goal. There needs to be a clear obstacle. And in this, like you're saying, KJ, it's we don't really know what the obstacle is. These people are time traveling in the past to kill people, but we're not really sure why, you know, or who's even sending them back.
Yeah, nobody has any real objectives or real...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's no, yeah, they're all just kind of making it up on the spot. So there isn't that through line. So we never get anywhere close to the goal. And so there's no tension because there's nothing to really fight against other than this vague idea of the end of the world. And I also think that we have a problem a bit with the main character as well. His goal is to, well, his obstacle is that he really loves this woman, Rose. Is that
Rose? Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Rose. And he can't be with her, even though they've been romantic together, they've had sexual interaction, because he is in Los Angeles in order to succeed.
Not as an improv girls. As an improv troupe.
As a guy with an improv troupe who also writes a bunch of scripts and what
He's got a pile of scripts. Yeah.
He's got a pile of scripts. Yeah. So it's
which again, it sounds like they were doing improv, maybe they were recording it, and so, well, why can't you be with me? Because mm-hmm. I need to fulfill my dream as an improv troupe leader, right? Like, it's yeah. That's the an audience would love that. Like, that's
yeah. It doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense, though. That
right,
this man
right.
is doing improv so often he can't go to dinner with someone. Or,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this brings up the question that we want to consider on all of our episodes, and I'll ask you, KJ. Do you think a larger budget would have helped iron out or fix some of the problems we've discussed?
So I was reading some of the reviews on IMDb, and I've read a word today that I kind of really liked. They said it's a micro budget film, which I kind of liked, because we don't know the budgets of films, right? And mm-hmm. I know my head can't handle the scale of the budgets of a big film compared to a small one, right? $3 million sounds like a lot, but it's not. But that's a lot more than 10K. So I like the idea of micro budget to mean not Disney mm-hmm. style films. I don't think a budget would have helped this film. I think a budget may have gotten them out of kind of the bland wall apartments that a lot of these scenes were shot in. Mm-hmm. So you might have had better sets. But I think it might have hurt some of the improv. I think it would have made them feel like they need to deliver more and might have gotten them out of the improv headspace.
I agree with you about the look of the film, which seems to be they used friends' apartments and you know, they probably have an improv place and they filmed in that improv studio. Some of the film takes place in an improv studio, and it looks like they found every single camera angle they could in that space in order to create diversity. And that's great, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, a larger budget would make it more visually appealing, of course. I think that the lack of special effects actually helps the movie a lot. And I think a larger budget would attempt to garner attention by having kind of flashy things that I don't think would have helped.
And I loved towards the end, they go through the time machine and they're jumping from paradox world to paradox world. One of the mechanics is if you're wearing a bracelet, you're immune to the paradox, but you need to go through a door to reset or get another paradox shuffle, which was great for a low budget special effect. Just go through a door, cut to a new thing, go through a door, cut to a new thing. And now I'm realizing that then gives you another stage for improv, right? He's kind of meeting people who now live in his house because it's a slightly different world. And they say, what are you doing here? And now he has the chance to make another improv joke. It was all just to prompt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Those scenes probably were improvised. Those
right.
probably, yeah.
Either improvised or, again, they might have had a history of improvised jokes to pull, mm-hmm. right? Oh, that really worked in this show back in August. Let's include it in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, just to give our audience a little context here. If a paradox occurs, so we know what a time traveling paradox, right? You go back in time and kill your father. A version of that occurs. You end up getting trapped temporarily in a paradox world. If you're wearing this sci-fi bracelet, you are aware you're in the paradox world. The people in the paradox world just think they're in the normal world. So in one scene, the time traveler purposely induces a number of paradoxes. And our main character, Barnaby, is trapped in a paradox world. And when you move from move through a door, you enter another paradox world. And so what we see is him going through a door, being in a room, and there's just a person there going, what are you doing in my house? And then they, as KJ, as you're pointing out, improvise a little scene.
It's a gas leak. Here's a delivery.
Like, yeah, exactly. So that's what we're talking about. So that ends up being a really good way to not have to spend a lot of money, but also put more improv into the movie.
I thought it worked great. Like, I really enjoyed those. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my problem with it is there isn't this sense that something's gonna go bad. It's just you have to go to through a number of doors until things like stabilize.
There's no tension.
There's no tension.
There's no actual conflict, so to say, to resolve anyway.
Yeah, but I think so. I do think a larger budget would hinder the creative possibilities due to that sort of need for razzle dazzle, right? That larger budget films have. However, I think that a larger budget would bring in bigger names and a lot more, a lot bigger names who do have kind of improv skills. You know, you could think of SNL graduates and what have you. And even just, you know, really good actors typically are also pretty good improvers as well. So you could bring in a lot more of those people, and you could have a lot more time to improv. And so what we see with Adam McKay movies, who made Anchorman, he made Talladega Nights and whatnot, is they have like 1.5 million feet of film. They just keep improving, and cut together the best stuff. What a budget would do for this movie would allow you time to improv, and get more and more and more and more.
Get the cream of the crop instead of...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be very good. And you could bring in more actors to join in this improv stuff. Typically we have Barnaby and his son, Copper Wire, and they're...
Is it Copper Wire or Copper Fences?
Oh, I don't remember now.
I think it's
is it Copper Fences? Yeah,
well, because that's... She's like, what's your name? Copper. What's your last name, or how do you spell your last name? Fences. And it had to be the spelling, so that the audience had to put the joke together in their head, right? If this was improv, Copper Fences. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, Copper Fences. But typically we only see those two actors improv, or at least comically improv. I think the last scene between Copper and Rose, I think, was improvised. I get the impression it was, but it isn't a humorous scene. It's a sentimental one,
which is kind of cool too. Then they're using improv for a different use.
Yeah, which has been done before, obviously, but it's fine.
So Tom, let me ask you: you're at a film festival, you're watching Paradox Lost, you're with a great crowd. Are you running back and suggesting your studio picks this up?
I think so, because I think with a little bit more money and a little bit more time, I think the concept works really well. Now, of course, when a studio picks it up, they're going to recast the leads. And I'm not saying that as a commentary on either of those performances. It's just how things work. And I honestly would like to see, a number of different actors attempt this. Again, not a commentary on these actors, but I think those constructs are pretty fun. And it'd be fun to watch certain actors, be able to play off each other in this. So I think so. I think I would make an offer, so to speak. How about you, KJ?
Yeah, same. I really enjoyed this movie. It's a fun sci-fi film. Didn't take itself too seriously. I like that it was improv inspired. As I mentioned before, that helped and kind of hurt the flow of the movie sometimes. But I, as I said, I think that could be a great tool for future movies. But the biggest thing for me in one of these micro budget films is when the credits roll, how do I feel? And I felt really glad that I watched this movie, as soon as that the director's name came up at the end, there was a smile on the inside of me that I really enjoyed the movie. So it's a strong yes from me.
Okay, great. Who would you like to see? The studio, I'll phrase it this way. The studio is recasting it. We need big names in order to draw in a lot of eyeballs and dollars. We have to recast it. That's their demands. Who are you auditioning?
Okay, so the way I would love to do this is keep the actors we have, but if they have flashbacks, put in these guys, okay? Mm-hmm. For our lead, Barnaby, who is played by Danny Sybil, I can imagine a young Matthew Fox being in part of the flashbacks. Matthew Fox from Lost, from Party of Five, generally trying to keep people together, always has this look on his face like, oh, what are we going to do next? Okay, we can figure this out. How about you, Tom? Who would you cast for some of the others?
I think for Copper, Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Who is this... I'm not the biggest fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The show's a bit too cruel for me. However, I think Charlie Day is very funny. And he also has this sort of warmth to him that I think Copper has as well. You know, the writer, director, actor who played him, whose name is Dennis Curlett, has a very similar feel. He seems like the type of person you would want to care for and help, and who seems a bit helpless and kind of a bit of a loser in spite of himself. And Charlie Day has that same kind of vibe.
How about Rose? Any ideas for Rose?
I don't know. Maybe one criticism of the film is her character is sort of underwritten, right? She's a sort of obstacle. So there's not even enough there to be like, who would be, you know, like any 20 something year old female would at this point, I think, serve. I don't know. Do you have any ideas for Rose?
No, I similar boat there. She's not on the screen that much. She plays an integral role in the plot, but yeah, there's not too much of Rose in it, which is kind of a shame. I liked Rose a lot. Clarissa Thibault, she was great.
Yeah. And she has a moment. She has these little moments to, she has these little moments, these little scenes. Like she's with her son, even though she doesn't know it at the end, and they have a bit of a scene there. But mostly she is there in order to provide Barnaby with an obstacle, right? She doesn't seem to be too much of a person in her own right. And that may be something where you could get a good female improver, a good female comic, in order to not just be this obstacle for the lead, but actually, you know, kind of flesh it out and be funny. She doesn't really have the opportunity to be funny either. It's official. Paradox Lost has made the list. So please, Dennis Curlett, keep making movies.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video, subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is, and Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies, wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next time when we discuss Radius from 2017. Stay tuned for our impressions of Radius. Next week, we'll be discussing Caroline Labrice and Steve Leonard's Radius. Tom, how was your watch?
It was good. I watched it on the computer, and I found it compelling for a lot of it because you don't know what's going on. It's one of these movies, and we'll get into the plot next week, where there is a mysterious circumstance set up, and the main character has amnesia, and the main female character also has amnesia, and so they can't tell you what's happening, which allows them to become sort of stand-ins for the audience, where they're asking people or looking at things and trying to figure out what happens. So that is all very compelling. I think that there is some problems I had with some revelations in the movie that I maybe was less excited about. However, I think there's a decent amount of dramatic tension in this movie that really sucks you in, especially in that first act. That first act really is an attention grabber. How about you, KJ? How was your first watch?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how I stumbled across this movie. I think I watched Cube, Cube 2, Cube 3, Circle, and then Radius was just the next obvious title choice there.
Did you watch Pi also?
I have seen Pi, but I don't think it was on this loop to keep up with the shapes. But yeah, maybe we'll get to Pi one day. So, but Radius, it's well shot compared to some of the other movies we've been talking about on here. And I did enjoy that. I like movies with a cool sci-fi mechanic. Audience, if you do get to visit this film, it has a really fun sci-fi rule set that the characters have to deal with and play with. But in the end, I'm not sure it paid off. Radius is available on Fubo at the time of this recording. I've never used Fubo, so I don't know exactly how that works. But we'll see you next week. Wow, Talking Studios,